Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Oh, hi, everybody. And this is a subdued morning version of the podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. And yes, you are listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Good morning, Bob.
You sound like CBC Radio right now.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, no, it's really working for you.
Thank you.
You sent me a note at about 6:45 this morning. I, of course, was up. And you said, hey, I'm going up to the cottage today, so let's do the pod tomorrow. To which I wrote back, no way, fucker. Let's do one right now. And so here we are.
That is indeed true. Bob Mackowitz did throw some expletives my way when I informed him of my change of plans for this morning of May 25th, 2021.
Now you're starting to sound more NPR.
Yeah, that's true.
You're like, because CBC Radio still has energy. It's just not that like friendly energy. It's that... the ideal CBC host is like your fun professor.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I've done, let's see, CBC, NPR. Hey, everyone, 11 minutes off the top of the hour, 49 minutes. Oh, wait, no, let me do that again. Hey, 12 minutes past the hour, 48 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Next, we'll go to traffic, and it's a doozy out there. You're listening to 93.3 The Rock.
I haven't done a time check in so long, and It reminds me of when I used to be at the CBC. And I had to do time checks in the morning, but I also had to do them in Newfoundland. And because it was in all those different time zones, like I could say, like it's 7:12, but I would have to mention Newfoundland, but I could only do it. So here's what I mean. 7:12, 18 minutes to the hour in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
I have to do the math in my head every time to compensate for the 30 minutes.
How many CBC hosts do you think had to do that little awkward pause as they were trying to figure out the time math?
You know, very few, because I know they didn't really do time checks on a lot of their tape shows, and none of the other shows were national. But I said to them, like, honestly, like in Newfoundland right now, how many people are listening? 8? 9?
And of those 8 or 9, how many of them do you think possess a clock in front of them? Like, you know, your phone has a clock, your computer has a clock. The giving of the time, that was, you know, at a time when we didn't have access to that sort of information as easily as we do now.
For good and for bad, The CBC will make a $1 million decision based on the possibility of 4 angry letters.
Isn't that amazing? Like, just and not just about CBC, but just in general, how companies are so scared of the letter, or companies are so scared of Twitter, when it really only represents such a small part of the population.
I guess they have people who are hired to be scared by stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so speaking of scared, last night's game, let's talk about it. I almost want to do a point counterpoint kind of thing. We should obviously state that it's good. The Leafs won. It was 2-1. It maybe didn't end as confidently as we would have liked, but here we are. It was 2-1. Do you have any overarching takeaways from last night's game?
First takeaway is, I mean, both goalies were great, but just Jack Campbell. My first takeaway is him. And you're right. That third, no one can feel good about that third period. Only 2 shots, and he made like 15 saves. And yeah, and the Leafs didn't generate almost anything in that third. But all teams are going to have those runs, those bad runs, as other teams get desperate. And there was Jack Campbell, you know, safe in net, calm. Just you felt really good about it.
He was a point counterpoint kind of night, because the Suzuki goal I watched as like
bad.
Not a terrible goal, but you know, not a great one. And then he was terrific in the third period. And this goes back to the Corey Crawford, Grant Fuhr school of goaltending, which is you can cough up the bad one, or at least the so-so one, if you stop the big ones. And he did. And you know, Price on the other end is not helping matters. Got the, you know, I think we're going to be seeing the Spezza save for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
But you know, Campbell was equal to the task. And so that has to be point versus counterpoint.
And it feels like, and we don't know this as it is now 15 minutes off the top of the hour, 45 minutes. Oh, no, I always screw that up. It's 15 minutes past the hour, 45 to the top of the hour. And so, yeah, we won't know till later in the day, but feels like Campbell deserves the start again tonight.
I agree. There's reasons not to give it to him, but they're not good enough. He's playing hard. He's been prepped for this moment. And the alternative, like Freddie goes in. Okay, maybe he's good. Maybe he's not good. But maybe I shouldn't care. Maybe this is like the CBC worrying about the four angry letters. But if he plays really well, nah, there's no goaltending controversy, is there? It just goes back to Campbell. Campbell's gone well enough that he doesn't have to hear footsteps, right?
Oh, no, not yeah, exactly. The only way is if Campbell physically wasn't, you know, able to do it. We've seen him get maintenance days after games. We saw it after game one. And if only if he is physically not comfortable playing back to back. And I think that'd be difficult for him to even say. I you know, so that's the only reason you can think of. But yeah, Campbell deserves it. And I would be shocked. I'm now at the phase where I would be shocked if Campbell wasn't in net.
There should never be back-to-backs in the playoffs. I know that these things drag on forever. I get that. But it seems kind of like a cruel and unusual punishment to ask those players to go through that beating and then to serve it up again the next night. At least in the regular season, you can start your shittier goalie. You kind of go, okay, I know we're not going to win this one, so we'll do our best. But you can't have that mentality in the playoffs. So it's almost like if they started having three-day turnarounds in the NFL, saying, well, you know, Wednesday night looks pretty good. I think it's too much. They should definitely not have too many of these.
Yeah, oh, no, they only have this one, and it's just because trying to get the Canadian games going because the regular season went a little bit longer because of Vancouver. At the very least, at least they're in the same city. There's no travel. I agree with you. Back-to-backs also just feel weird in the playoffs, but at least there's no travel for the team.
Well, and there's one less Canadian team to worry about, which we will get to a little bit later.
Oh, my.
I kind of want to throw this out. And, okay, let's talk about some awesome stuff, because I do have some questions, and they're bigger picture questions, and they're not all positive. And the team's up 2-1, so I don't want to be the guy who's like, hey, we won. What went wrong? Austin Matthews, is anything giving you more joy than watching him laugh at the Habs?
It's fantastic. It's now two games of that. Like, and the best thing is his expression is the expression of the sports fan watching some of these stupid scrums with the face rubs and everything else. Like, it's just him going, what the hell? Are we doing this? Is this really going on? All right, well, hey, do what you want.
You know what? I've been trying to figure out what that face is, and you're right. That's what it is. It was like, are we doing this? That's I'm so grateful to you, Matt. That's exactly the look on his face. What? Shea Weber, your glove's in my face. Are we doing this? That's so good. Good for you, Matt.
It's great.
Thank you. You got to use that on your show today.
Oh, done. I'm making a note right here. I haven't even thought of my opening thought yet. But he's almost laughing at some of the hockey conventions.
Yeah, and the hockey cliches and the hockey tropes. I mean, that's, and in a way, like the Habs are serving up a classic cliche playoff underdog series. We're going to play hard. We're going to take extra effort to get, you know, some scrums going. We know we're not as good, but we're going to have the great goalie and just enough scrums that we can keep it close. It's a total cliche. You know what I wanted to say about Matthews? And this is kind of a Captain Obvious point, but it's a personal one for me. I have never felt watching him the way I do now, which is the way I felt over the years watching guys like Crosby. You know, Bergeron was there. Kopitar was there during the LA run, where MacKinnon is getting there now, where every time they're on the ice, you feel like you have the advantage. Like, no matter what the situation is, the second they step on the ice, it's like the game tilts towards your side. He has now game taking over charisma. Every time.
and it's consistent. That's the other part of it. Like, it just feel like we haven't seen a dip really in Austin Matthews. It just every night or in these three games, almost every shift, you feel his presence. The guy, like him and Marner had more ice time than any of the defensemen. Matthews was just over 23. Marner's was 24-25 last night, more than Morgan Riley's ice time. But yeah, every time Matthews is out there, you're like, oh, good things are going to happen.
It's like the fourth quarter with a great NBA player or the fourth quarter with a great quarterback when a terrific hitter, like a guy who consistently hits over 300, steps up in an important spot. You know, it may not work out for them every single time, but you bring a certain confidence to watching them where you go, it always can. It always can. And you don't feel that with hardly anybody, really. You'd think it's kind of luck when things go your way. And it's not a heater. It's not like he's just heating up like Willie Nylander right now is playing great. I feel like every time he steps on the ice, something good could happen. But I also know that could go away in game four. But with Matthews, I feel like every single game they play for the rest of the playoffs, he will be a difference maker every time he walks on the ice.
Yeah, you're right. And you're right about, like, and Nylander was great. Nylander scored in every game. But yeah, with Nylander, we're not at the point yet, even though he's been great, of like, oh, we know we can expect this for the entire time. But with Matthews, you're right. Our expectations are at the highest level.
You brought up the ice time. It's an interesting one. Nylander's outplayed Marner in a lot of ways, but Marner has done so many things. He's been just an agitator out there and great stick work. And you know, but at 25 minutes plus a game, like how long can he keep doing this? They got to find, like, how long do you keep putting him out on the penalty kill as good as he is? Because you're adding so much ice time to his game and you're going to grind him down.
I'm curious about how much ice time does Marner get tonight? You know, we talk about the back-to-back and what that means for Jack Campbell. Well, what does it mean for Marner in his 24-plus and Matthews in his 23-plus? You know, Engvall and Galchenyuk were both under, and Nash, like they were all under 10, and was the ice time tilted even more because there's no Foligno? And what point is Nylander going to hit 20 minutes? So many questions with ice time, but I'm fascinated with that tonight.
There's you raise a great point. Joe Thornton feels like he can come out of the lineup tonight. He hasn't been especially good. He's been kind of a nothing, really. But, you know, he's 41 years old, so you can make the back-to-back argument, which means you sub somebody new in. Nick Robertson, maybe? I don't know. You get Foligno back as a fresh body. Riley Nash has really been giving you nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what you do with him long-term. I'm starting to wonder, like, what's this guy's fit on this team? But, you know, you can get a couple fresh bodies in there, but you're right. The back-to-back, I think, hurts the Leafs more than it does the Habs in the sense that the Habs are just trying to – they don't have that much skill to lose. It's not like they're going to lose much top end. It doesn't exist. They're just there to grind it out, survive as long as they can, hope Price keeps them in a game, and hope for a lucky bounce. So I feel the Leafs can and should win tonight, but I'm more worried about tonight than I was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I agree. After that 5-1 win on Saturday, everything's felt pretty calm, and I think everyone felt pretty good about Monday's game. And the thing about Montreal, I thought Jeff O'Neill brought up a good point on SportsCenter, is that with the Habs and their offense, they have these flurries of action, and then they go away, you know, for large stretches of time before they come back. And it's because they just don't have that high end forward talent. And you know, listen, Caulfield, he rang one off the post, but Montreal just goes through stretches where you don't notice them offensively.
It's actually a very obvious, but not so obvious point, because when you think back to watching those games, there are moments where you go, holy geez, did they put 8 Habs on the ice? Mm-hmm. They just seem to be everywhere. And then 10 minutes will roll by and you're like, geez, did they put 3 Habs on the ice? All I know is that tonight worries me. Even if it goes 2-2, I can't imagine the Leafs losing this series. And I thought that it was going to be 6 games. So I am mentally prepared to lose tonight. Even after the 5-1 win, which made it feel like maybe it'll be a 5-game series, even without Tavares. But I'm prepared to lose one of the next two, and I think it's going to be tonight. I don't say that happily. I just, that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, also in terms of, you know, not knowing exactly what's going to happen, we could go to the other series. Edmonton just got swept. They got swept by a Winnipeg team that didn't end the year strong. There was no Ehlers or Pierre-Luc Dubois in game one. Connor McDavid killed them in the regular season. Like, this felt like we were all waiting for Edmonton versus Toronto, and Edmonton didn't hold up their end of the bargain. Not even close.
I don't know what happens there, but something has to. You can't have this kind of playoff performance and the playoff performance last year not have changes. And I would assume it's going to be Ken Holland, although who knows? Who knows? Like, does Dave Tippett fall on the sword? They don't really have any players to get rid of. You're not going to get rid of McDavid or Draisaitl, and nobody else really matters. What are you going to get rid of? Darnell Nurse and change the organization? They don't have a ton of options. It feels like it has to be a front office thing. You know what I thought of the other day, Matt? Do you remember when the Hinkie tank with Philadelphia was getting so embarrassing that the league, quote unquote, kind of stepped in behind the scenes to encourage Colangelo coming on board?
Yes.
Do you remember that? And there were all kinds of suggestions because Philadelphia was such a revenue driving organization that the other owners were mad because they were sucking, they were losing money, and it was causing everybody to lose money because of all this tanking they were doing. And the other owners were like, no, we've got a game to protect here. We've got my money to protect here. You go fix that situation over in Philadelphia. You get Colangelo over there. And I wonder if I'm Gary Bettman, how do I feel about Edmonton right now, knowing what they're doing to my best player?
So then what you're saying is, do we have to get, there's no ex-GM out there. Do we have to get the smartest ones and they just got to leave their current teams and they got to head over to Edmonton?
I don't know what he would do, but I've got to believe he's picking up the phone and he's, what's their, Darryl Cates, is he still on that team?
Sure. Yeah. No cats. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm on the phone with him and saying, you've got the best player since Gretzky. What the hell are you doing? Like, if this guy was in any American market, we'd be making more money for the rest of my guys. We allowed him, wink, wink, we allowed him to go to Edmonton. the Arctic research base of the NHL.
I got it, Bob.
What?
We need like a GM timeshare or an executive timeshare. Like you know how like when the expansion team comes in and they get to take players, and maybe not permanently, but if they want an executive from Tampa, if they want Dubas for 3 weeks, Pridham for a month, some of the execs, Sakic, Iserman, you know, just go grab. You're allowed to have some of these executives for a couple months, and you know they can act as consultants.
Cause that is so funny, timeshare executives. You get to have some of the smart ones.
Yeah, exactly.
That is
so
good.
Hold on, you know this because you know, just with your, actually it's not the same as your place, but just in Huntsville, Edmonton doesn't get these executives right before the draft or free agency frenzy. You don't get them then, but we will lend them out to you. You know, you can have them for 3 weeks in August, but we're not giving them to you 2 weeks before the draft.
Okay, so I've got a couple Oilers wine picks for you. You ready?
Yep.
A Canadian wine that is world-class, but people don't know because it's Canadian. This is the Connor McDavid wine.
I'm going to go with, there's a winery, Checkmate. It's like in the Osoyoos area in southern BC. They make some of the best Chardonnay. It is killer. But people just don't people when they think of Canada, they often just think of ice wine. So I'll go with a Soyuz Chardonnay.
Okay, and for Leon Draisaitl, kind of the same question, but for Germany. But a German wine that everybody should know about, but they don't.
Okay. Last time I was talking all about Riesling, so I'll avoid that. Let's go with the other one. They're Pinot Noir, and because it's Germany, they can't call it that because that's not enough syllables. So German Spätburgunder, which is German Pinot Noir. Really tasty.
What is that? Steakburgunder?
No, Spat. It's either Spätburgunder or Spätburgunder. I forget what we do with the second syllable. But it's like 17 letters, but it's Pinot Noir, German Pinot right. Noir.
I got a kind of an old school Macko and Cause big question. Yeah. And then we can go.
Yeah.
With regards to someone like Connor McDavid, and there are others in the various leagues who have this too, it raises the question, to what extent should the success of your team be a measure of your personal greatness? You know, he did only have one goal mm-hmm. in those four games. It's not like he was amazing and everybody else sucked. But that's not really the point I'm trying to make. What I am trying to make is the larger one, which is he had this incredible regular season. The team flames out of the playoffs again. They've gotten almost no traction during the time that he's been there, except for one year where it looked like, I think they did two rounds and it looked like they'd be exciting. But other than that, it's been just a dead spot. He was drafted in 2015. He's been around a minute now. He's entering his prime years. And his team can't go anywhere. To what extent should that be a reflection of his personal greatness?
Well, if we do this, it has to count. But we don't. It's so difficult. People are reluctant to be at all critical of Connor McDavid because we see the individual skill. But he had bad turnovers in Game 3 and Game 4 that led to Winnipeg Jets goals. So he deserves some criticism, but he'll always get protected. It's funny. It's ironic. He will get protected because of how bad the organization is. But no, if you are the best player, you've got to wear some of it. You absolutely do. You know, it feels like baseball is the only one where you can avoid it. Like Mike Trout gets no, all we have is sympathy for Mike Trout. We don't have any skepticism. Basketball, the most skepticism. Quarterbacks get plenty of it. No, McDavid deserves some for sure.
Carmelo Anthony, for years, this was one of your big knocks against him, was that when it mattered, it didn't matter to him. But, you know, he could put up 28, 29 points a game in the regular season. But he just wasn't your playoff guy. Plus, you hated him because you killed your Knicks for so many years. It really does speak. It does speak to every different sport, though. You're right. In baseball, it's less true because you're an individual at the plate. Like your performance doesn't rely on anybody else. But in a game like hockey, you know, how do you criticize one guy when the team is bad? One guy can't lift the team. This was my point earlier about Austin Matthews. Why I'm so excited by where he's at is he does lift the team every time he's out there. He does. You can just see it. He steps on the ice, they get better. And, you know, I hate to say it, but Connor's losing that magic. He's losing that buzz, at least in the playoffs. How long till the narrative turns around to say, yeah, he's great, but... And maybe that's not fair. In fact, I know that's not fair. And if I'm him and I'm his camp, I just keep thinking of two words, Kevin Garnett. Eventually, you've got to get the hell out of the sad sack organization. And even Kevin Garnett's Wolves made it to a conference final once with Serbiak and, geez, who was the other one? Was it Marbury who was also there?
No, they got, no, it's not Marbury. He left. It was, Sam Cassell. They got Sam Cassell. Yeah.
You know, so like even they had a minute. These guys are sad sacks. And whether it's fair or not, he's always going to be remembered as the guy who couldn't win. Not didn't win, couldn't win.
Is there a camp less fun right now than Camp Connor McDavid?
I don't know. I actually think it'd be kind of fun because there's a kind of a somebody is having an angry phone call. You know, the kind where you have to roll up your sleeve in order to hold the phone.
Mm-hmm. The Jerry Maguire.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Somebody is having that phone call right now. I would assume, I would hope, geez, somebody's being paid a lot of money to have that phone call.
Well, I don't know, though. You know, you're in Edmonton and, you know, just, I don't know. I think Camp Connor McDavid wouldn't be the most pleasant of all camps. Yeah, you like in all the all you see now are all the memes of how it started and how it's going, and the how it started is how awkward he looked when he found out that Edmonton won the draft lottery, and then the shot of him at the press conferences after the losses in game 3 or 4. Ooh, how miserable is the NHL right now that they're not going to get McDavid versus Matthews?
I would assume very miserable. Hey, Cause, it's coming up to 30 minutes. We said we'd do a quick 30, so why don't you go enjoy your cottage, and we'll do it again tomorrow, because we got a hell, like, first round in two playoff, in two leagues gives you a hell of a lot of topics, so we'll do tomorrow.
Done and done, and also don't forget, jeffpollock.com, that's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com, if you need legal advice, he is our lawyer. He should be your lawyer as well. Well, everybody, it's 37 minutes past the hour, 23 to the top of the hour. I'm Matt Cause, and that's Bob Mackowitz. Goodbye, Bob.
Goodbye, Matt. And in Newfoundland, it's 13 minutes after the hour. See you, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.